Thank you to all who've led us in worship this morning. Most of you know that in 3 weeks, I start my sabbatical, which means that including this Sunday, I have just 3 Sundays to say something meaningful and of significance. What do you say when we as a church fellowship are going through such a phase of transition, when there are so many unanswered questions, and when I am about to be away for months? I am coming back though, by the way. Well, I believe God has given me some things to say, and the first of those I want to share with you this morning, and it's something that has been growing and I've sensed I need to speak about, because it is the subject of fear, which I sense growing around us, and I want us to think about that and our response to it. As I talk to people, as I listen, I don't think I've known times quite like this, when I've sensed so much unease amongst people, so much fear, particularly in society around us. You hear people talking constantly about the news. Isn't it awful? What's happening? Where's it all going? These are such dark times. I've not known these times before. I guess perhaps there was a change that took place just after the bombings in Paris last year. Then it was followed up with more recent incidents in Brussels. And I just sense that people are saying, this is no longer just on our television screens in the distance in some foreign land we don't know. It's coming to our cities. It's almost like there's an attack on us. This week, people were arrested in Birmingham in relation to that somehow. And so it kind of spreads. And I've just sensed people are feeling we're under attack in some way. Where's it all going? And the fear spreads. And it's an obsession that is fueled by the media in ways that never was the case in the past. The media stirs this up, and of course it does. It wants your ratings. It wants your readership. And so it has a desire to put the graphic images there, the things that will draw you in. It wants the explosive stories. This week, a book was released by a journalist, Jürgen Toggenhofer. And it's a book called, the title is, My Journey into the Heart of Terror, 10 Days in the Islamic State. And apparently, this book is full of chilling observations about the way these people think, the way they operate, and their practices. And then he's drawn some rather chilling conclusions about where it's all going, what the future holds. And it stirs the flames of fear. But it's not just terrorism. Then there's the economic climate, the fact of things changing on a global scale. China, the economy's changing and it's slowing down. What's going to be the impact on us? What's going to be the effect on pension funds? Will I have money when I'm in my retirement? Does that mean we're not going to do as well as a nation? Does that mean we're going to be even more cuts, more austerity? What does that mean for the health service? Is that going to impact me? And the fear seems to grow. Then there's immigration, which seems to be a problem that's almost overwhelming in Europe. And not just people coming out of Syria. Watch. It seems to be coming from Africa as well, as economic migrants are wanting a better life. And people are struggling to cope with it. And so it spreads. Now, I'm just giving you the headlines. But just as I look at your faces, I recognize if I continued, oh, no. Oh, the depression. Exactly. Isn't it interesting? But have you sensed that? Do you sense this growing discussion and obsession and conversation and the fear that is coming with it? Here's the reason why I want to address it today. Because I believe God would call his people to give a different voice in this world. A world that is crying out to hear a different message. First point. But the second reason I want to mention it is that I sense that fear. Hello. I sense that fear, like the electricity, creeping into the church. And that's not good. It's good to have the electricity coming, but not the fear. And here's the reason why. God does not intend fear to be part of the lives and the witnesses of God's people. This is what we read in Isaiah 43, verse 5. Do not be afraid, for I am with you. Did you get that? Do not be afraid, for I am with you. It's a simple phrase, but beautiful truth in that. You don't need to carry fear because God is with you. And in a society where fear is evident all around, God's people should be different. And you know, God's people can be different. Don't get me wrong. I don't want us to deny the reality of what is happening around us. But I want to encourage us to see that God is above and beyond any of those things. And instead, I want to encourage us to take our focus away from all the problem issues and instead to turn our focus to the divine, eternal God of grace. So we're going to look at this issue of fear and our response to it. Let me clarify some things. There's fear and there's fear. Some fear is a good thing. The fear of the Lord is a good thing. That's a reverent fear. That's absolutely right, recognizing that our God is the awesome, almighty God who put the stars into space. Wow. A little bit of nervous, apprehensive fear within us can be a good thing. It can be useful to have a few nerves, to be a little tense. And under the right circumstances, it's built in. That adrenaline, there are times when adrenaline is good. It's a God-given gift to us as a kind of warning device that we shouldn't get too involved with certain things. I had a good sense of nervousness that you might almost border on being fear when I worked in a workshop that belonged to a cabinet maker for some time. And the fear, the reverence that I had was towards some of the electrical equipment that I was working with. Very powerful stuff, huge saw blades zipping around. And he was particularly prompted when he told me one day that on his apprenticeship, he'd been there working in the labs and someone had been using a spindle machine which hadn't been connected properly and a nut had come slightly loose and this thing flying around at several thousand RPM came flying out of the machine over his shoulder and embedded itself in the wall behind him. Now that kind of fear and respect, that's a good thing. Yesterday I was at a wedding. I found another kind of fear. I sat next to, not just that. Yes, we all know that Larry and Joy are getting married shortly. Gone. And those of you who've known Larry for a long time know that Joy may have good reason to be fearful. Bless you. I don't mean that. But yes, a different kind of fear at a wedding yesterday. I sat next to someone who's going on holiday to Rhodes soon. I thought, wow, that's fantastic. I know someone who sit here who'd love to be going to Rhodes next week for a week. Do you know, she said, I don't want to talk about it. She couldn't bear to talk about it because she knew that before she could get there, she had to take a flight. And she was frightened of flying. Someone else there was frightened of spiders. Somebody else was frightened of snakes. That kind of fear, that's not good. But actually, that's something we do need to bring before God. But that's not the fear I want to talk about specifically this morning. Those are irrational fears that might need to be dealt with. I am speaking the fear that causes anxiety over the future. Such a sense of fear about the future, worry about how things will develop, it becomes a preoccupation with the problem. And that kind of fear is what I am seeing around us and at times among us. Now, it's not just terrorism. It can be the economy. It can be fear over finances, including the church finances. It could be fear of health. It could be fear of family concerns. Any issue which gives us such a sense of events somehow being out of control. But if things are out of control, what does that say to us about our trust of the God that we say is sovereign? That's what I think about this morning. Do you know, at some point in our lives, we've all probably had problems with fear. And the difficulty with it is it makes us a prisoner. It causes us to be paralyzed, whether it be safety in travel and flying, whether it's fear of loneliness, fear of rejection, fear of change. My goodness, how we struggle with that one. Fear of uncertainty, fear of sickness, fear of death. I believe our gracious God would call us this morning to look at this and recognize he wants to release us from these things. In Psalm 27, David is able to declare that despite our wide range of the most horrendous and challenging of circumstances, he had confidence in God. He had confidence in his Lord. So he begins, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. So whom shall I fear?" What a bold statement from this man. David knew persecutions in ways that you and I almost certainly never will. His life was genuinely threatened again and again. He had King Saul on his tails chasing after him with all the might that a king and his nation can bring to bear. And yet, in the Lord, he found light to see in the darkest of circumstances. And he found salvation from the divine and eternal God he'd come to know. And so the fear and being afraid that he spoke of as being this possibility in verses 1 to 3, he contrasts in verse 3 with his confidence in the Lord, his stronghold, the ever-present protection. Oh, and this is a confidence that grows because of his experience of God. The Lord's deliverance of him again and again, that's his testimony. Do you know, this isn't the testimony of someone who's burying his head in the sand like an ostrich. That's not the case at all. He knows exactly what is around. He knows he's surrounded by his enemies. Just look at the language he uses. Verse 2. What would you be like if you had to say these words? "Evil men advance against me to devour my flesh." He's painting an image. It's like a wild animal hunting. That's David. He was hunted, literally, by King Saul. He threw a javelin at him and tried to kill him again and again. Verse 6, "My enemies surround me." Verse 11, he speaks about his oppressors. And then in verse 12, he says, "And false witnesses rising up and breathing out violence." This is not a guy who's burying his head in the sand like some fantasy. He's not hiding from the reality. Yet, he has such confidence in his Lord that in verse 3, he can say, "Though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. Though war break out against me, even then will I be confident. What a testimony. I wonder, is that the confidence that you have in your Lord? Can you say that whatever threats come, however black the situation may be, that you will not crumble? That you will not be held prisoner to the circumstances, the darkness? Can you say, I will trust my Lord in all of it? Because that's what David could say. And I recognize that's challenging. Well, here's the secret of David, for David, and it's actually the secret for you. When he spoke about an advancing enemy stumbling, it wasn't that he had a great gift of clairvoyance and he could see the future and he knew what was going to happen. It was that he knew his Lord was God, eternal, sovereign, and he trusted him. Whatever happened, he trusted him. He trusted his Lord, and he trusted him with his life. He trusted him with his whole future. Do you have that trust? Well, actually, I really hope you do, because you were singing it loud and clear in the songs that Chris and Sam chose for us and put together in our worship. They knew what the theme was. That's what we were singing. And I will trust in him alone. That's what we said. Do you believe that? Or are they just words? I can say to you, I have absolutely no idea how powerful the Islamic State is going to get. I have no idea how widespread their influence will be. I have no idea what the state of the economy will be and what that will do to my pension that wasn't looking great when I last looked at it. I have no idea what the state of this nation is going to be in the years to come, but I'll tell you this. I believe my God is sovereign. And if he allows those things to take place, I stand with him. I will stand on him. And I am not in the least bit worried about whatever direction those things will take, because I trust my God. These things are not out of control, because that's the definition of God, who is sovereign. The enemy gets to push so far and no more. I believe fear is such an issue, even for God's people, that it is worth looking at some of the responses that we have to it. In the face of really bad situations, we tend to have a number of responses. I'll point four out to you. The first is the kind of rabbit response. Shock. You know, rabbit in the headlights. Paralyzed, literally paralyzed with fear. Can't do anything, useless. That's not good. Second fear is what we might term the fear of Corporal Jones in Dad's Army. You know what that is? What sort of response did he give? Don't panic. Don't panic. Which was the very thing he did. And dreadful decisions come out of it. Lack of wisdom. That's not good either. A third response, you might argue, is the military response. Where the military is sent into the toughest of circumstances. They will face death. The enemy will try to kill them. In that situation, panic or being paralyzed like a rabbit is just not going to help. So they are trained. They are trained and trained and trained so that when some horrendous situation comes in, the training kicks in and they just do the job. That's what they need. There's a sense in which for God's people, that training comes to a point in the fourth option that I want to mention to you, which is the godly response that I encourage us to nurture. It's David's response. What did David do in this passage? Or more specifically, where did he go? He found shelter in the house of God. Verse 4. One thing I ask of the Lord, this is what I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple. That phrase, house of the Lord, he might have been thinking about the tabernacle established in Gibeon. He might have been thinking about the temple which was to come, that his son Solomon would later establish. He might have been thinking about that, we're not sure. But he was almost certainly using the word temple to mean the presence of God. In the face of fear, in the face of potential threat or uncertainty, there are lots of things that you can do. You can try to avoid it, you can forget it. If things are so bad, you can try and distract yourself. You can turn the television on and watch a quiz show and try and forget. You can watch a film for 2 hours. You might be able to go and play a game of golf or go on holiday for a week and get away from it all. But you know what? At the end of the day, they're just distractions. Eventually, the film will end, the game will stop, and you've got to come back off your holidays. And if the issue's not been dealt with, it's still there. Those are just covering it up. What David did was he came and dealt with it by coming into the presence of God. And he didn't do so just once. His longing was to dwell there, for it to be an ongoing sense of the presence of God in his circumstances. And that's what he does. He worships God when things were tough. One thing I ask of the Lord. His greatest desire was to live in God's presence each day of his life. To look up to God instead of focusing on the problem. So in the face of adversity, whatever the Lord invites you, do you recognize that the Lord invites you to come and just enter his presence when things are difficult, when things are awful, to instead gaze on his beauty and know him rather than continue to be overwhelmed by the circumstances? Let me ask you, when you feel overwhelmed, as we all do every now and again, what is your response? What is your response to coming and being in the house of God here, which is one of the great ways that we can come into God's presence? Are you one of the people who would say, oh, sorry, I'm just not feeling up to it at the moment. I can't do that. Or do you come and be in the presence of God? Let me share with you, if I may, my very real experience of just that situation. From time when Lorinda and I were in Zambia, actually just after our relationship had begun, and neither of us had gone to Zambia looking for a relationship, and we'd found one another, and this just great gift was dropped out of the sky. It was just wonderful. Well, that's my perspective. It was great. And all of it was just going so, it took me a long time to hook this fish. But anyway, I had to kind of work at it. That's where I learned perseverance. But then we got there. Sorry, it's going to get worse. We got there. And it was wonderful. What a blessing this relationship was. Right up until a few weeks later, when Lorinda suddenly started to have second thoughts, panicked a bit. She suddenly realized what it must be like to spend the rest of her life with someone like me. You can kind of understand that, can't you? Don't have to agree quite so much with that, by the way. I don't need to come back off this sabbatical, you know. But she had some second thoughts. Oh, and my world collapsed from under me. This great gift from God, what was going on? That was on a Thursday evening. Know it very well. And so we went to some good Christian friends of ours and we shared it with them. And they said, why don't you just leave it on the table? Leave this relationship on the table. Go away. Give it to the Lord. Just think about it for a couple of days. And so that's what we did. and we went away. And Friday, for me, was a rubbish day. It was pretty awful to start with. And slept. I couldn't think straight. My head was spinning. What was going on? Where did this come from? What? You know, my head was all over the place. I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't work. Couldn't focus. So I just took it to the Lord. And I couldn't do very much. So I just read my Bible. And I read and I read and I read and I prayed and I just gave and I cried out to God, what's going on? And eventually, I sensed just a peace coming in. And God spoke to me with some amazing pictures that gave me such confidence of the future. Just the stunning images. I haven't got time to go into all of it. And that continued. And so in Saturday, as Saturday went through, the same process, and I'd struggle and I'd lose my confidence, and I'd get back with God, and it would come back again. And I was able to keep going, and suddenly I was feeling brilliant, right up until a point on Saturday evening when I came across the lady who'd been supporting Lorinda and praying through her through this period. And she came to me and she said, Steve, it's okay. I think it's going to be okay. At which point, I completely lost my confidence. I lost all of that peace, totally. I was thinking, I don't know where it went. It just evaporated. Isn't it interesting? One comes from God. And then I heard words of confidence from a person, and it just evaporated. That night, I couldn't sleep. I was restless, tossing and turning. Barely slept at all. Managed to drop off, and at 5 o'clock in the morning, I woke up. Babbling birds outside. Have you ever known anything about babbling birds in Africa? They're a nightmare. They're like starlings on acid. On the windowsill, right by my bed. Squawking like mad of all the days I didn't need them. It was horrendous. Tried to get to sleep again. 6 o'clock, the woodcutter. Chopping logs the other side of the wall behind my bedstead. What was that about? He never cut wood at 6 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. I wanted to get my axe. I tell you, it was horrendous. So I eventually went in for breakfast. And I sat down, probably barely sleeping, cold, barely having had any sleep, cold, miserable. My whole world collapsed, not feeling good at all. I was. And there in front of me at the table, where I was sitting, was this lovely, deeply devout Christian lady, the lady who lived in the farm. And she said to me, she knew what was going on. She said, are you coming to church this morning? And I said, I don't think I am. I just feel absolutely rubbish. I don't think it'd be good this morning. And actually, before she'd said any words to me, I knew what she was going to say, and I knew she was absolutely right. And she turned to me and she said, Steve, you know, sometimes it's when you're in just that situation that you need to come to God. And I knew she was right. And I went, to this church service, and my friend Tim was leading it. And I thought, he understands me. He knows what's going on. This will be a good service. So I sat there at the front on my own, really quiet, feeling utterly miserable, and my whole world's collapsed. And what do we start with? If I were a butterfly, I'd flap my wings on. Is he kidding me? And so it went on. Do you know, through that service, every prayer, every song was for me. I couldn't get it. There's like a fog in the way, and I just couldn't break through to what God was saying to me. Right up until the time when we sang, Open our eyes, Lord, we want to see Jesus. We sang the song, and we got to the end. And when it was all gone silent, Tim just said, Just see Jesus. And I did. The clearest vision I can begin to ever describe to you. My eyes were closed, my head was down, and I saw Jesus on the cross, covered in blood, that scene of horror. And I knew that's why he went to the cross. He went to the cross for the pain that I felt the misery of this world, the horrors that we go through, the hurts. Exactly the things that Annalise was sharing last week. And in an instant, in a millisecond, I was overwhelmed with peace. And I knew everything was okay. I didn't know that everything was okay with my relationship. That wasn't even the question anymore. Oh, it was so much bigger. I knew everything was okay between me and God. And I just started crying. Couldn't control myself. Now, I was from a Brethren church where men do not cry. We have joy, deep joy, deep, deep joy. But we don't cry. We're not emotional. I couldn't stop myself. I won't go into all the details and say what happened after that, but well, we're still here, aren't we? The sense of God. What I needed was not just a solution to the issue. That came and over a long time later. But what I needed was the peace that comes through the presence of God. Do you know the outcome of all the circumstances that we face are up to God? And I know that I can trust him, that he knows best whatever those outcomes are. But the most precious need is for peace. And in the presence of God, we find a place of spiritual safety and security. It's a place where we are surrounded, enveloped, protected from the enemy's desire that we are in constant turmoil and anxiety. God offers shelter from that. And David uses this interesting phrase in this passage to describe it in his terms. Verse 5, "For in the day of trouble he will keep me safe in his dwelling. He will hide me in the shelter of his tabernacle and set me high upon a rock." Two things, shelter and raised up on a rock. Shelter above. And on the rock that is above our circumstances. He said a similar thing in Psalm 61 in this prayer very much from his heart. He said, "I call as my heart grows faint, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. I long to dwell in your tent forever and take refuge in the shelter of your wings." The picture here is of God surrounding you, sheltering you from above. Meanwhile, being raised up above the things that otherwise would pull you down on the rock, raised on the rock. And Jesus is the rock of our salvation. You know, the world around can seem dark and problems affecting us can seem overwhelming. You have a choice. You can either obsess with the issue or you can wrap yourself in God's presence and know his love. What does the Bible teach us about love? 1 John 4, verse 18. "There is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out." If you want to live a life away from those fears that the world is preoccupied with, you'll find it in the perfect love that is the presence of God. Two practical suggestions for you. One, avoid dwelling on the negative, please. Don't fill your life, your mind, your conversation with the negative. You've heard me say this so often, but I really feel this is a message to us as a church. Philippians 4, verse 8. "Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is praiseworthy, whatever is lovely and admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about these things." I've been attempting to do that a little bit as we have pulled back from our busyness and we come into our times with God and we're waiting on the Lord. And I've attempted to give up what for me is probably one of my addictions, the news. You know, when we first met here, that very first Tuesday in a time for God, it was such an intense and special sense of God's presence with us. It was just precious and I wanted to hold on to it. Do you know what? I didn't want to talk to you all afterwards. I remember saying something gently to encourage that. I knew some of you felt the same way. I didn't want to go back down to earth again and talk about where you're going to do your shopping now. Oh, really? You're getting your hair done, right? I didn't want to go down there. No disrespect. You're lovely people. But I wanted to stay with it. So I went home. And my normal practice would be to turn on and watch the lunchtime news and see what's happening in the world. And I didn't. Instead, I picked up a book and I replaced the fear and the negative stuff with God. Oh, what a joy. It just continued. I want to encourage you. Don't fill your life with this rubbish. Don't fill your life with constant reflection over things that are challenging. I recognize they are challenging. Don't dwell in them. I want to encourage you to do something else with it. As an aside from that. In your conversations, when we have tea and coffee next door, and when you come together for tea and coffee with time for God, I want to encourage you, leave the negative stuff behind. Not just the politics and all that side of things. Some of the really negative things. I've found that sometimes in our conversation, we can be dwelling on the bad things of life and thinking about them instead of looking to God. What did he do? He gazed on the beauty of the Lord. Let's encourage one another. Let's build one another up with positive things. That's what David did. And the second practical solution is linked to it. In verse 8, he says, "My heart says to you, seek his face." He says, "Your face, Lord, I will seek." I want to encourage you to just give God time. Let him speak into whatever your situations are. Just give him time with you. You don't need to tell him what everything is. He knows. Just give him time. In the face of these challenging times for the world, and for some of you who've got really personal, very specific challenges that you are facing, and I do not belittle, and to us as a church with some of the big questions that cause us anxiety and cause people concern over finances for the future and the congregation that's getting older and how are we going to deal with all that? Don't worry and don't stress about those things, but just spend time. Are you willing to give God time to speak? In verse 11, that's exactly what David said. He said, "Teach me your way, O Lord. Lead me in a straight path." Why? Because of my oppressors. I used to go through the Bible every year, read through the whole Bible in a year. I haven't done that for a while now. And I thought to myself, while I'm on sabbatical, I'm going to do that. I'm going to... I think I've calculated if I spend 45 minutes a day and I don't get distracted by cross-references and things and, oh, that's interesting, I'll read that again elsewhere. I think 45 minutes a day will get me through the whole Bible in the time of my sabbatical. And I'm going to soak up God and give him a chance to speak to me. Maybe you'd like to do something similar. Are you going to go forward in fear? Exposing yourself almost exclusively to the negative problems that undoubtedly are all around us? Or will you spend time with God and cultivate this confidence that David knew as a reality? David ends his psalm with some very interesting words, bearing in mind what we're doing as a church. He says this, verse 13, "I am still confident of this. I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. So wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord." He really had to wait. He didn't know all that Jesus would do on the cross. You do. Jesus died on a cross to take our sins, our pain, our hurts, to give you the chance to live in freedom. Are you going to stand on this world on rather shaky ground? Or are you going to stand on the rock who's Christ? You might want to think about that as we sing our final hymn together.